So even though we didn't get to spend too much time together at the Tableau conference last week, I did run into you fairly frequently, which is something I enjoy. It's sort of fun how people sort of pass back and forth between groups. Like you'll hang out with these people for a while, and then you're with other people, and then so on. But you were someone I kept running into, and then you told me you'd written a book, and I'm like, we got to talk about this. So, Desiree, how's it going?
It's going great. I have my book, like I have physical copies of my book as of Friday, the day after I got home from Tableau Conference, of course. Like if it would have been a week late, a week earlier, that would have been fantastic, but oh well.
I got my visionary package after I got back from Tableau Conference. So like my new
Nice.
shirt and all that fun stuff, like things that would have been fun to take. I mean, I have the shirt from last year, so it's fine. But I was like, oh man, like that would have been handy to have. But you know, that's just how it's mail. Like that's how it works.
Indeed.
So like, let's talk book. Like obviously that's the big burner thing. We're gonna talk about a lot of stuff, but like you have written a book, Everyday Data Visualization. What made you want to write a book? Like, where did the idea come from? Why this topic? Like, what's up?
Well, so I've always been an avid reader, like since I was a kid, and I would gobble up anything from my favorite writers. And oftentimes when writers aren't writing about like writing their fiction or whatever, they're writing about writing. And so I've read a lot about writing and I have a decent command of the English language. Not the human language, the English language. And so I always kind of thought like, hey, maybe I'll probably write something someday, maybe if I have the attention span for it someday. I really don't, actually, it turns out. But I have a course on Coursera right now, actually, where I'm an instructor. It's about fundamentals of visualization with Tableau, that was produced by University of California, Davis, and they had seen my Tableau Public portfolio, which is at the time it was very, very full of Makeover Mondays. Now at the top, there's a lot more Workout Wednesdays, but yeah, it's still quite robust. So UC Davis saw my Tableau Public portfolio, and they wanted to have me on screen to do be a Coursera instructor. So I did that. The Manning Publications saw my Coursera course, and they're like, "Hey, you're pretty good at teaching. Do you want to write a book?" And I was like, "Yeah, I want to write a book." Didn't actually think that I would ever write a book about data viz because, unlike you, I am not titled in the community. I used to like to say I'm nobody, but people have yelled at me a lot for that. So I kind of fly. I like hover around all of the like titled community folks and kind of lurk a little bit on social media. And so yeah, I decided to yeah I want to write a book. And they tell you that it's a lot of work. And you know, like you've heard that it's a lot of work, but you don't really know until you actually sit down to do it. You're like, holy crap, this is a crab load of work.
I can believe it. And also like don't get hung up on title as to skill level. Everyone knows like five people they work with who is like on par with some of the best people you've seen publicly. And that's just sort of the way it is. Like there's a lot of diamonds that are up, like hidden jewels that people don't know about. Like my friend David Kelly had a big glow up this year, and but he's been amazing at ETL for a long time. He just didn't have a way to demonstrate it. So yeah, like lots of people are great at a lot of things, and I believe that your course was probably great. I was teaching a course a little while back, and I'm like, that program sort of folded recently, and I'm sort of glad to be done. I enjoyed it while it lasted, but I get it. Like, I love teaching. I can tell that's a passion for you as well. So you're sort of shifting your practice from one methodology of doing it to another. In terms of writing the book, though, like for this Coursera class. Was this sort of like what am I thinking of Pluralsight, where it's a recorded class that you sort of assemble once, or did you actually do it like virtually with students?
It's like a Pluralsight kind of thing, you where you just record it once and then UC Davis, they manage all of it. Like I don't have to touch it at all after that. In fact, actually right now they're about to overhaul it because it released in like early 2020. So I mean, and there's like screen captures of Tableau Public at the time, and so you know, things change
Yeah.
pretty quickly in the tech world, so it needs to be refreshed every few years. And I decided I didn't want to do that on the side anymore, because having a side gig is just, it's a lot. And I did the Coursera course and I did the book on the side, like while I had a full-time job. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done with this. I don't want to do this side gig thing anymore. So I punted it off to a friend and pretty sure she's gonna be the one in front of the camera next time.
There's a certain point with that kind of stuff where where it's diminishing returns and you've sort of like fulfilled the thing you were looking to get out of it. And I enjoyed teaching the classes and stuff, but like as the program kept changing and stuff, I'm like, I don't really care so much about this anymore. I mean, you've made way better use of it than me. I actually went through all the effort to become a Pluralsight author. So like they have this accreditation process. You have to cut a video, you have to do all sorts of stuff. So I did all that about 2 years ago. And then when I was looking for stuff that I might want to do, like just no topics I was interested in putting in the work to develop. So I haven't revisited it lately, but for maybe the first 3 months, I would check periodically. I'm like, yeah, like just none of these things I feel both enough of an expertise in to deliver value and also passionate enough to put in the effort, because the effort to like sort of cut your own video demos and stuff that are ultra high quality, it's a lot of work. So like when people see stuff like SQL Bell or Tableau Tim, and they're doing those kinds of things out there. Like it's very easy to overlook just how much effort that goes into it. And when, you know, they're getting, you know, tens of thousands of subscribers, and obviously they're getting some ad revenue back on that, 100% deserved. Like it is a ton of work.
Totally. I'm so glad that I had UC Davis to do all of that hard work for me. I feel like they did all the hard stuff and I just wrote the like content. I wrote the scripts and I wrote all the assignments and everything. And but yeah, I would not want to do like the video stuff and no.
I have a face for audio. It's not my medium. I get it. So, you know, Manning reached out to you, having seen, you know, the classes you've created and stuff. Did they come to you with the topic, considering what they had seen you do, or did they kind of say, hey, there's some things we're looking at, or ask you what you wanted to do?
Well, they actually asked me about writing a Tableau book. And I was like, I don't want to write a Tableau book because it's going to be out of date immediately, knowing what I had experienced with the Coursera course. And so I wanted to write something more like that would be more timeless, that, you know, would be applicable and, you know, regardless of when the reader is coming at it. And, so I asked them about that and I wrote a they had me write a book proposal, and so I did that. And like basically as part of that you have to kind of have a high level table of contents laid out, which I eventually chucked out the window and I redid anyway. But I was just like, yeah, sure, this looks pretty good. I kind of loosely based it on the Coursera course, like at least at the very beginning. But then it just kind of like evolved into its own monster.
So, Luke Stanky's a friend. It obviously this is an odd year to talk about Luke. There's a little heat around that because he's now with Sigma, which meant he could no longer be a Tableau visionary. And Sigma did a brief competing event on Wednesday at the Tableau conference this year, you know, where they were trying to get some eyes over there. I mean, they're a different company. They've got a different agenda. Like, I get it. Like, it's when all of your customers are in one place. Like I understand, I remember years ago, Luke and Ann Jackson had released a book together, and I'd asked him about this, like, what made you decide to write a book? He's like, why are you thinking about writing a book? I'm like, not really. He's like, because let me tell you, like, the reason to write a book is because you'd like to have a book. Like that's his main feedback on that was like, after the experience of having written the book, as difficult as it can be, you know, he's like, well, I've got this book to show for it, which is a thing, right? Because making a book is very hard. And like, you've given me a sample of your book. I have scanned through it. I have not read it in detail, but you cover a vast array of topics in here. And for you, in terms of this process, how much guidance was there given? Did they sort of dictate anything? Is there anything you wanted to get to and you didn't get to, or alternatively, things you wanted to talk about that were just, you know, we can't fit that in?
So there wasn't much dictating. I had an editor that I met with every week, and His purpose, he was amazing and super patient with me. And he was a little bit of a therapist sometimes because writing a book is really, it's like, it can be kind of torturous. And so his job was to kind of like make sure that it wasn't, his job wasn't even really to like correct grammar or punctuation or anything like that. That came at the very end and was a torture of its own. But my development editor's job was to kind of make sure that I'm not like meandering too much or that I'm being too wordy. Like that was a little bit of my problem. I get a little bit lost in the details sometimes, or I get like really excited about an anecdote that I'm telling, or you know, an analogy or something like that. So he just kind of like kept me on track, and you know, we having that weekly cadence too helped me help. It gave me a deadline to like work towards, but more than like a tighter deadline than, you know, my main book deadlines, which they divided into three sections. And one of them, like the biggest deadline, was supposed to be like in January something. And like, so right after Christmas, it was supposed to have like four chapters written. It was going to be like the meat of the book. And I was like, guys, I am like, I have a family. You know, that's right after Christmas. I can't like get all that done right after Christmas. I have responsibilities and you know, things that I have to do. And so I was able to like kind of push back a little bit. And I wound up actually coming in maybe like 2 or 3 months past my like total deadline of which had been about a year. So all told, it really wasn't that bad. I wasn't too late on it, but yeah, so my editor kind of helped with that. As for like what I wanted to fit in there that I couldn't, I feel like I exhausted everything, in everything in my brain. Cole Nafalic, who wrote Storytelling with Data, I asked her after her third book came out, Storytelling with You. I was like, could you believe that you have written three books now? Like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, would you have believed this? And she's like, no. She's like, after the first one, I thought I was out of words. Like, but she found like enough words for two more books after that. And I feel that, like, I feel like I was out of words. Looking back, I can see like, oh, maybe I should have delved a little deeper into like this thing or that thing or covered this example a little bit more differently. But yeah, all told, I don't feel like I missed much, if anything,
So now that
that I would have wanted to do.
that's it, I realized as I've queued you up for all these questions, and again, because I shoot from the hip and try to conduct this as a conversation, not an interview, sometimes I'm sloppy. What is the book about? So it's
Right.
everyday data visualization, and we've talked about everything in the process. We've talked about the stuff that's there and what's not. Who's it for? What's it about?
That's an excellent question. And this is the first like conversation about this book that I'm really having, you know, on a camera or on audio or whatever. So yeah, everyday data visualization, it's about design, like effective design as it applies to data. And I use the word every day, not to make it sound like mundane or boring, but because it's not about like the bespoke, artistic, beautiful stuff. Because I'm not very good at that. But I'm good at the stuff, like good at making the reports that are supposed to run your everyday life. That, you know, like the Fitbit kind of reports, or you know, financial reports that like the CFO is going to look at all the time, or you know, although they probably just want Excel. But
They say they do.
yeah. They sure do say they do. So yeah, it was supposed to be about like design for an analyst. It's I guess like I kind of wrote it to myself like, you know, 8, 10 years ago when I first got started with data viz, and I didn't know like I mean I was an analyst. And before that I'd been in grad school for physics. So I am not like design trained at all. I like beautiful things. And so like data visualization to me has been this like wonderful marriage of making things beautiful with like also being mathy and technical. And I know that I'm not unique in that. So yeah, I wanted to put it in the language of analysts because when I first started learning about design, it didn't all seem really applicable to me. Like it was always for somebody else. It was for people developing apps or like, you know, when you would go to like learn the design of something, they're like, oh, make this shopping cart thing. And I'm like, I don't care about a shopping cart. Like, give me a chart. How do I design with numbers? And so that's what I wanted to write.
I think that's very thoughtful because I think our sort of discipline is approaching a new era where a lot of people are coming in as natives. For us, a lot of us came in through different areas. I came in through IT. I was like a developer, and then I was a business analyst, and then I got into BI, and then I got into data visualization. So it was like a very weavy path. But nevertheless, here I am. Like you also came in from a different direction. And for many people, they'll come in with very strong technical skills, but it's sort of marriage between multiple things, right? Like you might be amazing at ETL. You might be really good at sort of taking direct requirements from a client, but interpreting that and understanding what will help them understand most clearly some of these things. Or should I have five different colors on this chart versus do they all need to be one color or should there be a highlight color? Those kinds of things. Those are a lot of things that I think people don't intuitively always know. Some people do, and they come in stronger in that area and might have other areas to work on. And that's one of the challenges about this profession is that there's so many different aspects of it that you really have to understand and be good at to like be successful on a day-to-day basis.
Totally, totally.
So, one thing I appreciate you tackled is you tackled topography in your book, which I think is something that I didn't put a lot of thought until several years into my career. And I'm fortunate at work now, we sort of have a base package you're sort of supposed to use and our own rules surrounding titles should be this size and this color and stuff like that. But it's very easy to not think as much about that and not be as intentional about that. Was that something that you sort of, put a lot of thought into as in regards to considering we often talk about charts and colors, but text and font and topography usually is a afterthought for most people.
Yeah, so I didn't know a lot about it either. And if you try to read and learn about typography, like from design folks, it can get really in the weeds. I mean, typography itself is about like these teeny tiny little things you do to a letter form that just change. It changes like the whole tone of it. And but they're just so tiny. So it can be a little bit dense to learn about. And so I wanted to make it easier to approach. And I think, honestly, I think I'm probably the most proud of that chapter. Because I tried to make it like just a little bit lighter. And I've gotten some feedback from folks and my development editor, in fact, he was so jazzed about it. He's like, this is all so good. And he also like did some typesetting and stuff for his own books. Like he's an independent publisher. And so he's like, I have to know all of this. This is all so good to have it all in one place. And so, yeah, did that answer your question?
You know what? Let's say yes. But
Okay.
no, but I think it's something to be thoughtful about. I didn't realize both my girls are dyslexic. How
Oh.
much, serif and sans serif fonts can make a difference in people's interpretation and understanding of characters. How many fonts, the weights of them don't translate so well at different sizes. And if you haven't sort of put some thought into that, and then there's also the color of it weighing against whatever else you put it on top of. So there's a lot there that can really hinder the usefulness of what you're putting out there. Like you may have good content, but you may convey it poorly. And I think that's one of those reasons to put a little extra consideration into it. And I mean, there's lots of experts I have on my desk for Christmas. I asked for two design books, so I'm looking outside of our immediate circle. I have design literacy, understanding graphic design, and I have graphic design rules, which has a very iconic red or green on it. So for
Nice.
each thing, it's like 365 things. For each thing, it's like a red, don't do this, or green, do this. And in many cases, as you would expect, they give you a red example, say, don't do this. And then 3 pages later, this is when you do this. So it's like with so many things, there's not always a never do this, but here's a better case of when you might want to do this. So I think it's really awesome that you've put this together. I think it's impressive and it's a ton of work. And I think a lot of people are going to be excited to have it. Let me ask you, in terms of your inspirations, obviously you said you reached out to Colin Affleck, who I've said before on the podcast that I accidentally ghosted a couple of years ago. Actually, that's being fixed right now. So I
Oh,
mentioned
good.
this, and it's great to have a friend like Will Perkins, who's like a human cat at good, because then he DMs Colin Affleck to say that you accidentally ghosted her. You feel terrible about it, but you've been too ashamed to reach back out. And she says, "Oh, that's silly. He should reach out. I'd be happy to come on." So that's being remedied, and I don't have to feel guilty about that anymore. But having said that, this is rambling and ADHD for the afternoon for you. Obviously, Cole was an inspiration to you in some ways. Were there any other authors or sources beyond, books and literature that you sort of looked to for your inspiration?
Inspiration. Well, Lisa Charlotte Muth is in freaking incredible. I feel like almost everything I've learned about color, I learned from her. And she even has a book coming out about color in Data Viz. So I'm super, super stoked to see that in print eventually. So she's been a, I guess, a big inspiration. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been good at the whole like role model, like who's your role model kind of thing. Like at the moment, I'm really looking up to Amanda McCulloch. I think that she is just absolutely incredible woman and like super badass. And I'd say that I want to be her when I grow up, but I think she's way too busy. I don't want to be that busy.
I get it. It's hard, and sometimes I met someone that I had looked up to a long time at the Tableau conference this year, and I had three awkward introductions to them, not because them being awkward, but me being awkward.
Feel that.
I'm a huge fan of Anya Ahern. I had never met her in person before. I've looked up to her for a long time. I love her work. And I was at a community event in the evening. I'm talking with Britt, the community manager, and I see Anya Ahern in the room. I'm like, "Holy cow, it's Anya! I've never met her." And he says, "Hey, Anya, come over here." I'm like, "No! Like, I'm totally unprepared for this." She comes over, and I'm like, "Hi, I'm Zach." "Hi!" And it gives me this big hug, and then I'm immediately awkward because I was not expecting like such a warm, big welcome. And she's like, "Oh, are you not a hugger?" I'm like, "I don't. This was. I'm sorry." So it's like I don't know. Like I don't get starstruck. Because most
Oh, I
people,
totally do.
you do. So
Oh,
like,
yeah.
we're gonna get in that. Like, but
Okay.
yeah, it's like, so I did that like two more times, and then we had a visionary summit, and for the fourth time, we were sitting in adjacent tables, and then they grouped our tables together. And she's such a good sport. She sees me like, "Hi, I'm Anya Ahern. How are you?" I'm like, "Thank you. Thanks for this. Like, we're good now. Like, we're fine. We can talk." But yeah. I definitely understand the idea of being starstruck. So, like, are there people that maybe this past week that you either met or saw that were sort of like, you don't have to go into details if you don't want to, but were
I don't
intimidating for
mind.
you, or that you had built up in your head?
So let me preface this by saying this was my eighth Tableau conference, like my seventh in person. And I felt the most confident this week that I ever have felt in those previous conferences. And like when I did get to meet Amanda McCulloch this week, and I was like achievement unlocked. I'm so happy right now. And I got a selfie with her and everything, and I felt okay asking for a selfie. Like it was awesome. Like I was even able to hang out with her for a little while, and I wasn't super duper awkward. Yeah, I was a little bit awkward, but yeah, there are for sure people that like intimidate the daylights out of me. Steve Wexler, like he is the sweetest person, and he's just absolutely wonderful, and everyone adores him. I do too, but I am scared to death to like say anything to him. Because or like not just him, but like other people, I don't know what to say. Like, besides, I just think your work is so cool. Like, that nobody wants that, or maybe they do, or I don't know. I try to think about like, what if somebody said that to me? How would I react? And I don't actually even know. So, yeah, I have trouble walking up and saying hello to people oftentimes.
I also love Steve. Steve is one of those other people that I was intimidated to meet the first time. And I think one of the first times we met in person was actually when he came to speak at my TUG. Like, he came because I had essentially rounded up enough people in the area to justify his class being here. And I had such a warm sort of introduction to him because he came into town. The tug was going to be in the evening, and it's like 1 in the afternoon. And he texts me and says, "I'm going to Graceland. Would you like to come?" And I'm like, "Okay." So we went, and we toured Elvis's house together. And
Oh my God.
it was a really unique experience. And it's funny, like Steve loves music, and it was a really cool experience to talk about stuff like that with him. I remember having a career talk with him in a pink Cadillac drinking coffee.
Amazing.
And also I think the big takeaway for me, and again, we're all over the place on topic here, and that is 100% okay. That's how this goes. But like, I remember, we were looking at the family graves because they have like Elvis's grave is there and his mom and his dad. And I think he lost a brother when he was like a baby or something. And Elvis's grave has like the TCB, take care of business with the lightning bolt on it. And I was looking at that and I was thinking like, can you imagine like Elvis went through still a lot of different evolutions, and that was what his thing was at the time that he died. Like, think about like the 5, 6, 7 more things that Elvis would have made since then. And it's like this just so happens to be like where it stopped. And it's one of those things for me where I'm like, it sort of encouraged me to keep trying new things and to sort of be open-minded and stretch myself, because I'm like, that's not how I don't think that's how Elvis would want to be remembered. I think he'd want to be, remembered for maybe his like entire catalog or something, but instead it's sort of stamped with the last idea that he had. And that sort of touched me. But yeah, I understand. And I think you're talking about like what's it like for someone like, the data celebrity or whatever, if we're going to be, very broad and call them that, where for 1 week a year, when these people are in a public place, a lot of people are going to know who they are and have been influenced by them in some way. And I'll tell you, I've experienced that on a much smaller scale. So if Steve Wexler is like the Tom Cruise of data, I'm like the Gary Busey of data. So like people recognize you from that thing, but not so much that you can't walk around. Like I'm not a fleur-de-lis. It's like they walk around and everyone wants a selfie with them. I walk around and for the most part, nobody knows who I am, but some people do and they'd like to come up and say hello or something like that. And I remember last year was the first year that ever happened to me. Some people knew me before because we had been friends on social media or talked and wanted to say hello. But last year was my first year as a visionary or an ambassador at the conference. And there were a lot of people I didn't know that wanted to come up and say hello. And my impulse when that happens is because I do not have super high self-esteem. I don't actually think I'm that great at most things. And look, I've seen Zach Bowders. I'm kind of over that. So like my impulse when someone wants to say, "Hey, I know you do that thing or that podcast or whatever." My impulse is like, no, like it's not a big, but like I had to really do some introspection there and think this is really rude. Like, because like this person came up to me and like, obviously whether or not I think anything of the thing that they're talking about, like it meant a lot to them, like, and enough that they wanted to come say hello. So rather than being dismissive of whatever the thing is and then sort of dismissing them and their feelings and stuff, just trying to be honest, be like, "Hey, thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot," which I do appreciate, but I also don't think I'm particularly special. So there's a lot packed into that. I probably, this more of like therapist talk. But having said that, when you come up to people to say hello, I think they genuinely would be happy to see you. That was a lot.
That's good. And I know like people have told me that, and I would feel that way as well. Maybe someday I'll get that, but probably not really. But yeah, I can remember meeting you last year at the Data Plus Women event, and I was actually really excited to meet you because I followed you on Twitter for a while, and you're so much fun to follow on Twitter. Like your stuff is just it's so entertaining, and I was for sure nervous, like and super awkward when we met, and yeah, and I also don't know like I've actually met and talked to Steve Wexler a couple times, and we've interacted on Twitter before. Like I've messaged him, asked him for advice on a couple of things, but I never know if he remembers me. And so I'm just like kind of, oh hi, I'm Desiree. Maybe you remember me, maybe not. I don't know. He might now because I've been on Chart Chat. Like I've attended the Chart Chat after parties several times, and I can't ever keep my mouth shut. So maybe he remembers me now. I'm not sure.
I would feel like he does. I mean, I think For me, I struggle with names and faces in general. So when I'm at something like that where I know there's going to be a lot of people that I'm supposed to know, sometimes it can be really intimidating. And one time I felt really guilty last week was at the Data Plus Women event. I had a coworker come up to me to say hi, who I had never met in person before.
Oh
And she came up and said, "Hi, Zach, it's me." And I'm like, my first thought was like, without the context of thinking, I blanked for a second. And then like, hi, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, and I felt awful. I'd like to say that that was an isolated event, but honestly, that's sort of a normal life thing for me. But it doesn't make people feel good, and it doesn't make me feel good. So it's something I try really hard to work on. One of the things I've been doing over the past couple of days is I'm trying to reach out to as many people as possible that I remember talking to, and just send them like a little message, like, "Hey, it was nice talking to you," both for their sake to say, "Hey, it was nice to see you," and also for my sake to help remember that we talked, because it's easy to see a face. I'm actually better at remembering the face than the person associated with it. So I'll know that I know you, I just don't remember from where. But yeah, that's something I'm actively working on to try to improve. I think that's so much of life, like sort of recognizing the stuff that you're bad at. Like, I'm bad at people coming up and saying hello to me, so I'm gonna intentionally work on being better at that. So that was a big stretch for me this year from last year. And as part of that, I don't initiate a lot of pictures with people because I'm trying to be as social and as in the moment as possible. If someone else wants to take a picture, I'm down. But like, I'm not typically starting the picture because I don't want to like snap out of the moment,
Agreed, agreed. I
Did
like
you
to be
attend?
more present.
Exactly. Like, I'm trying. I had times in the past of the conference where I was actively trying to like live document sessions where I'm like actively like tweeting it live and stuff. And I think that was really good for people that didn't attend, but it was really bad for me because I was so out of the moment that I wasn't actually absorbing a lot of what I wanted to take in. So this year, whenever I could, I tried to be a lot more present and be off of my phone as much and be with the people more. So that was a growth area for me. Were there any sessions that particularly blew you away this year, or ones that you really wanted to make that just didn't work out for you?
My favorite session was the Char Chat Live. I absolutely love attending those online each month when I can, and like just getting the four of them in a room was just absolutely fantastic. It was hands down my favorite session of the whole conference. I didn't get to go to like any of the tips sessions, and I think I really wanted to. I wanted to go to like the tip battle, but then there were like multiple tip battles and I was really confused. So there was that. And then I always like to go to the Flerlage's how to do cool stuff in Tableau, because like this year is 10 years for me using Tableau, and I still learn something new every time I like see them do that talk. But I actually started watching their session right before this, like while I was eating my lunch and watching them talk, and so I'm gonna start working my way through those because I really do want to watch them. I learn something new every time from those things.
I agree. I think for me, like the Flerlage session is one I like to watch, but it's one I won't go to in person strictly because I want other people to have the opportunity.
I thought of
Because
that too. Yeah.
like I know how good they are, I know how inspiring they are, and I know how excited they get people. So like I'm not arrogant enough to think I take up like five seats or anything, but it's like I'm like, I know how hard it is to get into some of these.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is one I want people to get into if they can, because I know what a big deal they are. And I think that's one of the nice things you were talking about, sort of, how intimidating it can be to meet some people, that, everyone's just kind of people. So if you were to see Ken and Kevin, they're just normal guys. They're very friendly. They're obviously very good and passionate at what they do, but like, they're not walking around with big heads. Like they're just happy to get to do this.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the nice things. And I think it's funny that you would say that you were really excited to meet me, because I was excited to meet you. Like I follow you online, obviously, too. So there's lots of people, like Jenny, from North Carolina. Like I had never gotten to meet her in person before, and she and her wife came this year, and it was really cool to get to meet her in person. Like there's so many people that I just sort of know and have known for a very long time. Or Jeff from Boston. Like, not Jeff, sorry, John. I was thinking about Jeff from Minneapolis. I'm not using
Oh.
last names right now. And I had to hang out with Jeff a bit. I haven't hung out with him in a couple of years. And John Whitmer, I don't think I'd ever met him in person before. So it was really cool to get to meet a lot of people. There's so many people I could name drop, but I'm not going to because obviously I'm butchering names already. And I don't know, it becomes the name drop game at that point. But and you're always going to leave somebody out and it's going to hurt somebody's feelings. But yeah, I think it's so wonderful that we can know people for several years and then you meet them in person. And I've never actually been disappointed. They've never been less than what I thought they were. They've always been more. And I think that's one of the sort of really edifying and rewarding things.
That is good. That's good also that social media hasn't tainted those people in that way either, that they're just like, putting even more than their best selves on social media. It's good that there's still more below the surface that you can actually like get to know.
I think so. I think social media, depending on the platform, I think people can be incentivized different ways. I think you look at LinkedIn and it's sort of very hustle culture, business language posts and stuff like that are very long form. Tableau is more sort of shit, like short and jabby, like it's almost
Twitter?
combative. Fortune, did I say Tableau or Twitter?
You
X,
said Tableau.
whatever it is. Yeah.
Oh, pff, Twitter.
Twix.
Oh,
But
but that's
I
a
mean,
good
like,
candy bar.
yeah. So like for me, I feel most comfortable expressing myself on Twitter just because like it's the length is good for me. I can put in a picture or an image and that's pretty good. And I'm not really gravitating towards platforms where it's all about the image. I don't only talk about data, and that was a choice I made sort of several years ago. Like I remember when I was getting really excited about data and Tableau and stuff, and I sort of what I looked at what other people were doing, and there are a lot of people that exclusively talk about data. And I'm like, I like data a lot, but I mean, if I'm going to talk about it exclusively, am I just going to become a person that like shares other people's stuff because I don't have that much to my name? Like, do I want to talk about this all the time? I'm like, no, I really don't. Like, I have a lot of interests, and I'm just going to try to cover the gamut here. Like, I'm going to go to like fully formed Zach and see how people deal with that. And for the most part, people seem to tolerate it pretty well. So that's been a win. But yeah, I guess my advice would be on social media. People talk about authenticity, and I think it's a term that we sort of wear out a little bit. But I don't know, try to be a you that you're happy being. Like don't say, you know what, I really like I don't know, Jenny loves romance novels. And she talks about data and she also talks about romance novel covers. And I think that's really cool. Like, I'm not into romance novels, but like, I love that she shares these covers all the time. And some are hilarious and some are really well done. And, and some have like foil on them and stuff. And I'm like, man, like, I had no idea there was like such a depth of this topic. And it's like, well, it might not be my thing. I love that it's her thing. And it makes her a more interesting person to me as a result.
Yeah, I love that. I'm also a bring your whole self to like whatever you do kind of person. I think I made that same conscious decision several years ago about not wanting to just tweet about data. Because I like Dungeons and Dragons and I like cats and my Twitter feed is full of all of those things. And so if you follow me, that's what you're gonna get. You're gonna get data, Dungeons and Dragons and cats and space.
That is an awesome combination. Like
Why,
Dungeons and
thank
Dragons
you.
and data. Like that's got to be like a shirt.
I
Have
think
you
it is actually.
ever seen it's a crossover between Guy Fieri and Dungeons and Dragons, and it's Dungeons and Dragons and Diners and Drive-ins and Dives. And like it might be the most perfectly like formed like meme ever. Like that's just delightful. I love it so much. So I am fortunate enough. I'm not going to say too much about this right now because it's a work in progress. You were talking about the side hustles. You've obviously been working very hard on this book for the past year, and it shows. Like it's a very polished. Like I can't believe it's your first book. Like I'll put it that way.
Thanks.
Like it's really good. I have fallen backwards into a side hustle that is outside anything that any of us or our peers actively work in. I will go as far to say that it is writing. But not for books or prose or anything like that. And I'll wait until something is further along until I reveal anything on that front. But Yeah, it's a combination of right place, right time, making friends with someone not knowing what they do, and then also like storytelling is very transferable across mediums, whether we recognize it or not. You've written this whole book, and it's about different ways to be a more effective storyteller in what you're creating. Data storytelling is a term that can sometimes be very cringy and triggering, but there is a reality to it, and it doesn't explicitly mean spelling out what things mean with words. It means thinking about your narrative flow and what you're putting on the page to best express the ideas. And I am working in a different realm of storytelling, and I would look forward to sharing that when it comes later. Hate to be mysterious, but that's I'm gonna leave it at that. But
Do
yeah,
you hate to be mysterious, though?
I mean, I wear it so well, though.
Exactly. No, I'm excited for you. I feel like I kind of might have a guess of what it is, but I'm super stoked to find out what it really is.
I love to be mysterious. No, I love to be quirky and obstinate. So that's sort of my lane. But I don't know. What I really like is to make things more fun. So that's really my brand. So that's why when you see me at conference, I have brought hundreds and hundreds of pieces of swag. Not because I hopefully not because I'm screaming, look at me, but because it always made me happy. Like it always made me happy years ago when Tableau Conference had bins and bins of pins to put in your lanyard.
Yes.
Like that was fun, and it was also something bonding where you could look at other people's pins and it said something about who they are. So I liked to bring something to the conference that is my own sort of quirky brand, and if it resonates with people, that's awesome. If not, that's okay too. But like I love how hard people came out this year with swag.
They
Did you
did.
like bigger than ever, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tons of people brought like custom swag, and it's I am one of those who brought my custom swag, but it's because I now own my own business, and so I was like, oh, I'm going to bring stuff with my logo. This is going to be networking for me. I was actually kind of surprised it's relatively affordable. It's not like super expensive or super difficult like I would have expected. Yeah, I actually have you can't see my whiteboard, and of course listeners can't see my whiteboard, but I have a Dataviz Maverick and a drag and drop magnets at the top of my whiteboard.
That's
That I
fantastic.
had gotten from you last year. So
That made
yeah,
my day.
I'm there for it. I love all the flair. I miss the bins and bins of buttons, and so I actually I bring old buttons from previous conferences. I had a screaming cat from the Big Book of Dashboards. I had that on my lanyard this year. It was a classic.
That is a classic. I do love the screaming cat.
It's good.
I love that everyone's going so hard. And in fact, I think it's a positive side effect of sort of Salesforce's sort of I guess climate pledge where they're like, hey, look, we're gonna make less junk. I mean, look, having said that, you did have like 1,000 Einstein wigs and lab coats and mustaches, but like we'll give that a pass. Like while I lament the buttons, I think it has led to a much more vibrant, personal, and more expressive version of it, where everyone is bringing their own stuff. I mean, I even brought some temporary tattoos this year. Like, that's not
Oh,
something we were
yeah.
getting before. So it's fun to see what other people are inspired by and what they bring and how everybody puts their own personality into it. I have right here on my desk, I found my old lanyard from last year, and it's a little pin of Lindsay Betzendahl as a cheetah with her
Oh, my
laptop.
gosh. I
And
love
it's
it.
adorable. Mark Bradbourne also has one where he is a flamingo, but they both hired this artist and had these made, and then had these really nice pins made, and they were giving them out. And
That's awesome.
I think that's so fun. I think it's so creative, and I think that's one of the wonderful things about sort of, being in a community like that where there's lots of people that just sort of want to, make others happy and get others excited about it. I will diverge for a second because there is something topical going on in the past couple of days. Have you followed the LinkedIn thread at all that's discussing terms like the data fam and how those might be considered alienating to newer people that are showing up to Tableau Conference?
No, I have not followed that, but it makes me roll my eyes, obviously, a little bit. I guess the data fam thing, it grew, it got so big. And I mean, it doesn't I if people are gonna get alienated and whatever, I guess they're just gonna do that.
I was thinking about it too. So I know for me, when I first started realizing there was any kind of community, I think I'd seen Twitter at the Tableau conference in like 2017, and people were sharing stuff like, "Oh wow, I didn't know this was a thing." And then I think Ann Jackson was one of the first more prominent community members I followed, and she would tweet like Makeover Monday stuff, and I didn't know what Makeover Monday meant. I just knew people made stuff and shared it, so I just kind of shared a thing I had made and tweeted. Like nobody called me out or anything. Like, but I didn't really
Surprised.
understand because it's very difficult to have any kind of central like knowledge repository for what the community exercises are or the terminology, like the data fam. And the data fam also, I think Andy Cochrane coined it apparently years ago. So I think that was obviously it's a marketing thing for Tableau, but it's something that people really sort of took and ran with. And I think it's a double-edged sword. So I think like obviously a lot of people find their way in, like not in, like there's no out, but it's like a lot of people figure out the terminology. And I think that's a challenge. There's always going to be jargon in anything. And I think that, you know, by having jargon that is associated with this, it makes people sort of more excited. I mean, I guess you could just call it the Tableau community, and they also use that term quite a bit. But it's a synonym
It's
at the end
so
of the day.
long.
It
It's
is.
so many syllables and so many letters.
It is, and it's a lot. It costs more to print on things. No,
Yes.
but I'm being, you know, I'm being silly. But yeah, I think like you and I figured out what a lot of this meant, and I think a lot of other people do. And I don't know. Like I can understand, but I don't know what the alternative is. The alternative is never to have any terms that are unfamiliar or new. But I think in what we do, curiosity and continual learning is essential. Like there. I didn't know what a Sankey chart is when I started out. I actually thought it was a snaky chart at first. That might explain where my kid's dyslexia comes from. Look, it looks snaky. Like it's curvy. Like
Yeah,
it makes sense to
totally.
me. No, but yeah, like I think I can understand the perspective of, hey, this language feels like it's exclusionary. And I'm like, it's not exclusionary in the sense that it's blocking anyone out because none of these things are things that people can't, you know, be a part of. You know, like the data fam isn't an exclusionary term saying like you're not part of this. It basically means, are you a Tableau user? You know, are you in on that? And I understand like saying like, well, what about Power BI users? It's Tableau's word. Like they made it. So I understand that. Like I also like the idea of a big tent where you can communicate a lot of ideas. But there's sort of different circles at work here, right? Like there's a sort of product and a company. And then there's also more broad work, like your book, where this is more universal language, not specific tool. You know, the big book of dashboards, although a lot of what they make in it is made in Tableau, it's meant to be interpreted universally to help people get better at the visual language and communication. So I don't know. Like I would love to hear other people chime in and talk about it. And I understand that it's sort of popping off on LinkedIn right now, but yeah, whatever people's perspectives are, like I don't know. I'm curious to have the conversation. Like I'm not usually the person to come in hot. You know, I like to moderate my perspective a little bit because everyone remembers the thing you said, not the thing you didn't say. So sometimes it's better to, you know, hold back and wait, especially if strong opinions. But I don't actually have a strong opinion on this. I just think you're always going to have jargon. I just think this is just part of the deal.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I never thought of, never, I guess I never thought about like Power BI users caring about it. I mean, I'm in the Data Visualization Society, and I'm in a community for freelancers, for freelance data viz folks, actually, excuse me, called Elevate. And I mean, there are plenty of people who do data viz and don't use Tableau. And I think most of them, they just really care about this data fam term. They're just like, ah, whatever. I don't care if I'm included or not. And but yet you also made a good point. Like, it's not something, data fam is not like setting people aside by some thing that they have no control over, you know? It's the name for a group of people that you can absolutely be a part of. Like, I feel like at the conference, like, you know, if you come to Tableau Conference, you're part of the data fam, right? Like, that's just, and if you don't, if you attend virtually, great. If you can't and you still like want to be part of it, fantastic. Like, it's not, you don't even have to use Tableau. Like, if you want to be a part of it and you care about data visualization, great, you know? I don't know why you would want to be part of the data fam and not care about data viz, but yeah, I'm sure that that's welcome too. Whatever.
I mean, I have many friends that are sort of active socially in like social media that don't put out very many public vizzes. Like, I
Yeah.
think people might assume you need to be really active in that. No, like you don't. Some people might not use it at work at all. Some people might use it exclusively for something. Some people might just be enthusiasts. Like, I don't know. I think it's a more inclusive term. And I think part of the reasons it's popping off is because Annie Nelson was the one who did the post. And I'm not throwing any heat here, but I hadn't met Annie before. I met her actually at a house party on Saturday afternoon before the conference. And I was unfamiliar with her, but apparently she's like a big LinkedIn influencer. So she has like almost 90,000 followers. So I think her post, which she apparently put up 4 days ago, but I just saw today, is getting a lot of heat. So a lot of people are sort of debating it out on there. But I mean, it's not contentious. It seems pretty friendly and even-handed, but I don't know. I can understand the discussion.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I don't spend a ton of time on LinkedIn. It just Yeah, you mentioned that like hustle culture. I don't know. It just doesn't, I don't like it as much as I like being on Twitter or Blue Sky or something like that. Although
You
my Blue
know,
Sky is really full of cats.
really, like all cats.
It's
It's,
almost all cats because like nobody else posts on there.
I mean, like each platform has its own like Threads. It's like the whole thing is like we're going to show you whatever we want. Like it doesn't matter what you like. You're just like that. This is strictly just marketing to you, and you signed up for it. It's like okay, you know, that's fine.
Meta product, right? Like, what do you expect?
No one is more disappointed than me that Meta now owns Oculus. Like once they bought that, it's like oh, come on.
Oh,
Just
I'm
give me
with
a
you.
bigger
I'm like, I
nice.
would love to do that. I would love to have one of those, but nope. Not a meta thing.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This has been almost an hour, so this has blasted by. Like I've had a really awesome time talking with you. And
Back.
when will your book be out, by the way?
It is in print now. I think, yeah, like I mean the publisher posted just this morning that it's available in print and you can order it on Amazon, but it's way cheaper if you order it from manning.com. So yeah, and I'm not sure of the shipping situation from Manning, but it's probably not gonna break even with Amazon. I don't know, because it's a lot cheaper from the publisher.
Well, in that case, if you're interested in Desiree Abbott's book, Everyday Data Visualization, go to manning.com and order it direct. And, you know, next time you see Desiree, make sure to hunt her down, like force her to sign, confront her personally, like come up to her and say hello as a stranger. Or like if you already know her, possibly fashion a disguise of some kind just to make the encounter more interesting and get her to sign that book.
Heck yeah, I love it. I'd be happy to sign your book. Thanks so
Awesome.
much, Zach. This has been super fun.
This has been a lot of fun. It's the conference come down can be a little disappointing, but it's awesome to be able to talk with a friend right away afterwards and
Yeah,
just
totally.
keep it rolling. So with that, thanks for coming. Everybody, let us know what you think about the debate and check out Desiree's book, Everyday Data Visualization.
She's a data analyst, a visualization queen, writing books on graphs, the best that you've seen. She knows her way around the data like nobody else. With every real line chart, she can make it sell. She's got a love for space. She dreams among the stars, mapping constellations and counting quasars from galaxies to nebulas. She's in her zone, in the world of data viz. She sits on the throne, and when the night falls, she shifts to another role. No princess or queen, but a dice rolling soul. She embarks on quests in a world.